Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Big MX Radio Podcast. This episode is brought to you by Race Winning Brands. You can go to racewinningbrands.com, check out all of their offerings, whether it's Wiseco or Pro-X. They both have two different lines of pistons that are unbelievable. You can also go to Race Winning Brands Canada, and that is, they're distributing not only Pro-X and Wiseco, but also Recluse, which is coming out with a brand new clutch system that is currently being featured in Eli Tomac's bike. Good enough for Eli Tomac, maybe the most clutch-abusing individual in the world, surpassing guys like Justin Bartra. If it's good enough for him, probably good enough to ride in your bike. So give those guys a chance and go over to Race Winning Brands and check out everything that Recluse has to offer. I am your host, Brad Gabhart. With me on the line, a very special guest, and this is actually the second time that I'm interviewing for him for the podcast. This is the first time that the podcast will be released, and we'll tell you why in just a minute here. Adler Cottle, welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks for making some time for me, my friend. You are in California right now, training every single day. And shortly here, we'll kind of get to why. If you spin the clocks back to, I want to say it was, I believe we chatted on like September 6th or 7th. It was a couple, maybe about 4 weeks after Loretta Lynn's this last year. And unfortunately, that podcast, it was requested of me that not get released. Honestly, the floor is yours, man. Kind of take me through the situation and obviously why. It was a great conversation. I loved that podcast. And I still have the audio from it. So if you ever do want it, I can send it on over to you. But the floor is yours.
Yeah, so we did that podcast, and then I decided I was going to go to a little local race that weekend, just a little money race, and had a crash and ended up burst fracturing my T5, and it crushed my spinal cord, so had no feeling to the lower half of my body, and my life kind of flipped upside down just really quick at, you know, a super small race. And so things changed. I already had plans, you know, to race the next weekend and a bunch of stuff. So it was, you know, a crazy time to navigate through everything.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like I told you off air, I know where I was when I got the news that my a friend of mine that actually I rode with literally the weekend prior, I remember when his dad texted me that he had actually passed while riding. And I also will never forget when your dad, Tim, texted me while I was announcing a race in Pilot Mound, Manitoba here. And my blood just went cold, man. Like speaking to you in September, the optimism that you had was like, it was very evident. And you're just a good guy. So like, obviously you want good things to happen to good people. And it was very disheartening to hear that you had suffered an injury like that, because as you said, it's life altering. Your life today, although it's still filled with training, it's training for something a lot different.
Yeah, definitely. It's not riding a dirt bike every day, which, you know, was my life since I was 3 years old. It's still training. It's just training in a different way. I'm training to walk, and I still have a great time with the training. It's what I love, the grind, and I wish it was a different kind of grind, but we're making the best out of this one.
For sure. So, I love the attitude, man. That is, if some good is going to come from this, in any type of way, attitude is number one. Unfortunately, you're actually not the first person to I've had on the podcast, both able-bodied and dealing with an injury. Jesse Nelson falls into that category as well. within this community, and we sort of talked about it off air as well, is that this is a very real risk that and a real consequence that many racers have dealt with in the past, either complete or incomplete injuries. And the first thing that I was really taken aback by is just the outpouring of support for Adler Cottle. Like, there, you were and you are a loved member of this community. The outpouring of support, we saw Adler Cottle jerseys at the First Form Ride Day, at Supercross races, at different ride days and stuff like that. The outpouring of support has been pretty incredible. And it seems to be continuing to this day.
Yeah, the support was crazy. I mean, it's like you said, it's a risk we all know can happen at any time, and even worse. I'm blessed to even have all the function that I have. But yeah, the amount of support I got from everyone, people I didn't even know, reaching out and supporting and running the jersey and stuff like that was super cool. And I had a really great, you know, inside group of people that helped get the word out there that, you know, I was struggling and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I mean, the entire moto community really comes together when something happens. And that's a really cool thing that I don't think you really see in other sports.
No, for sure not. Like, yeah, I obviously I'm more connected with the sport of motocross than any other sport, but, it is rather unique. And I think the support stems from the fact that, all of us do realize that this is a very real consequence, of when things go wrong on a dirt bike. And of course we just wish and we hope that that never happens to us. But when it happens to somebody who's a valued member of any member of the community, it's just, you rally behind that person because you know that that's what they need right now. And there's also a fair bit of sorrow that, kind of falls along with that because, in many cases, an injury like this, is usually, like it's a lifelong struggle for many. Even a guy like, Jimmy Button, who I'm sure you've probably come across a little bit in the last few months. He got injured, I believe it was 2000 at San Diego. Yeah, it was 25 years ago. And to this day, although he's able to ride a bicycle and he's able to walk, he's not 100%. Like, he still, like, has some sort of, some degree of paralysis in certain areas of his body, or still struggles with little things. And he's made an incredible, recovery. Like, he's basically come almost all the way back. And you're currently working towards that as well.
Yeah, it's a crazy injury. It's pretty impossible to come all the way back, but when you deal with something like this, anything that you get back is such a win that you love it. For the average person that hasn't experienced it, you look at it and it's like, oh, well, that looks kind of hard. But from where we've all came from to get to the point that we're going is such an improvement in our life that, you know, you take any little thing you can get back.
Certainly. So, like, we spoke off air about basically the prognosis or the, what you've been told from doctors, originally given a 5% chance of walking again. I feel like that number may have come up with for you a little bit, based off of, like what your feedback is. Maybe it's more of a self-diagnosis, but, like, what are some of the things that you've got back that, like, okay, like 6 months ago, you couldn't do this. Now you can.
Yeah. So originally they told me 5%. And I immediately heard that number and was like, you know, we'll see. But up until about a month ago, I had no muscle function, no movement below my point of injury. And this last month has been awesome since I've gotten out here to California. I've gotten multiple different muscles to fire. It's not you know, a super strong contraction, but I can get muscles to move and have some slight feeling in my quads, which is, you know, new and very exciting. It's encouraging. I have days where it's really good and days where my legs are nothing, can't feel anything. But yeah, so we're getting a lot of stuff back really quick, which I'm happy about.
Absolutely. I think, that optimism comes from like just actually getting some stuff back, and that just kind of fuels the fire. And like, so you trained for the sport of motocross for the better part of like your entire life. From the age of 3 onward, you were homeschooled from a pretty young age, if I'm not mistaken. And this life that you're leading now isn't a whole lot different. Just take the dirt bikes out, and obviously, like probably a lot less running. Like, so tell me a little bit about the training regiment and some of the support system that you've had around you. Guys like Mike Young, who, I've had him on my podcast. Honestly, I think I need to call him up because I think the last time I got a bit of a photographic memory. The last time I had him on my podcast, I was living in an apartment, that I haven't lived in a long, long time. So that means that it's been a minute since I called up Mike. So, I think he might have to be, a repeat offender on the podcast in the next couple of months here.
Yeah, Mike's awesome. Mike's helped me out all the time, and being out here in Cali now, I see him all the time. But yeah, he got me connected with some people out here and got me out here for therapy, and it's been awesome. The therapy out here is super, you know, load-bearing through my legs, and instead of working what does work, they work what doesn't, and try to get the reconnection to fire. So that's, you know, that's what I need and that's what I want. I want to be pushed, and they'll push me. They'll allow me to put in the hours, which is what I was doing, you know, riding dirt bikes. We all put in the hours in the gym and on the bike. Now it's putting in hours, you know, in the gym, trying to get the legs to refire. But the amount of just people I've gotten connected with through Mike and Road to Recovery has been crazy. I've made some friends, met a lot of people. The support still, even to this day, is amazing, from people that have been paralyzed, from normal people to everyone. It's still insane.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's continuous, and hopefully this podcast also draws some attention to your road to recovery. What's the training regimen look like, man? I know, from what I can tell, like, the facility that you're working in has some amazing people who, and honestly, like, I'm so glad that there are people like the trainers and the staff that you're working with that exist in the world. Like, people who choose to dedicate their lives to being patient and working tirelessly with somebody who is ultimately working towards getting back something that so many people take for granted, that's a very special thing that those people are able to sort of dedicate towards helping you get back to where you want to be.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm in there 2-3 hours a day putting in work. Right now the big focus is, like, I really want to lock out my own knees, because I'm convinced that if I lock out my own knees, I could start walking with a walker without feeling my legs. So that's the main focus, and the people here are super smart on how to help reconnect and find different muscle groups that I can get to fire. Because obviously not being able to feel my legs, it's really hard to contract your muscles and stuff like that.
So right.
They're super good at helping me figure out where to contract, how to move. And, you know, like I said, I really like the amount that they let me do and being pushed. It's couldn't be in a better place.
Okay, fair enough. So, that's encouraging to hear. What was the reaction from those around you closest? Like, you and your dad are like you guys are a dynamic duo, still are to this day. I had a lot of really good conversations with him at Loretta's this last year, got some pictures of you doing your thing, sent over to him and all that. And now, honestly, looking back at it, I'm really glad that, because like, you weren't on my photography list. Like, it's not like we made any type of deal or anything. I just, like, personally, you're 95 on a Kawasaki, and that, like, growing up, that was me. So I'm like, hey, there's next to zero chance I'm making it to Loretta's, so I'm at least going to take some pictures of a Kawasaki wearing number 95 here. I think that is 1,000% why I ended up taking photos of you, aside from the fact that I knew who you were. You and your dad super close, this is, like, This, like you said off air, like this might have hit your dad harder than it hit you.
Yeah, I think it hit all the people that are really close to me a lot harder than it hit me. Which, you know, I understand they were just worried of how I was going to take it, but
and just sad.
I mean,
for
I
you.
Took the blow on the chin, and yeah, I took the blow on the chin, and we're ready to keep working. But the support from my family and my dad, and you know, just all my friends was really what I needed at the start. And, you know, they're the reason that I'm in the headspace that I'm in, is, you know, just having that support, right from the beginning, which I've had my entire life, but it really takes something like this for you to really notice the amount of support that you're getting.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the fact that you're able to be mindful of that is a very powerful thing. Like just your resilience through this, is a testament just to that, the sort of internal fire that you have to be able to want to, work towards the things that are important to you. And I think that you're doing exactly that. Outside of training, what does day-to-day stuff look like for you right now, man? Like, 2-3 hours of the gym is a big time commitment, but there's 24 hours in a day. What else are we sort of filling our day with that's, I'm sure there's still some fun things that you're going on in your life. What's going on?
Yeah, definitely. I've got some friends out here in California, so, you know, I'm not a type of person that likes to sit at home, so I'm always trying to do something. I still love to go out to the track. I went to the first 3 rounds of Supercross, gone to the track, watched my friends ride sometimes, and yeah, I'm always trying to find something to do. I got a scooter that hooks up to my wheelchair. I'll go ride scooters, and yeah, I mean, I like to be a busy person, so that, you know, I still have a great time, even though it's different. Like, I mean, I still love to have fun and hang out with people.
Fair enough. Yeah. And like, do you find like, and this is something that I've talked to with some other guys that have gotten injured. Do you find that sometimes your friends feel like, treat you like you're fragile after that?
Yes and no. I have a really good group of friends, and yeah, they helped me out a lot when I needed it. But they understand now that like I kind of want to struggle sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, the struggle makes me stronger. And so, you know, they will give me my space and let me go through those things. But, no, I mean, honestly, I get treated the exact same from everyone in my life, which is super awesome.
That is great to hear. And like, yeah, first person that comes to mind is a guy like Will Posey, who, Will was like, he was a dirt bike kid. He was a filmer. He was an editor. He still is an editor. He was actually training to try and ride some Supercross, gets hurt. And, there's been times where I've helped Will in and out of vehicles and stuff like that, but he's very obviously, like, you know yourself now, you become very proficient at like kind of maneuvering yourself around, you know, your situation, you live your situation. I've literally seen Will at Loretta's when it's like muddy and shitty and like he's trying to push himself through a grass field, and you go to try and help him and he's like, don't help me. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, no, dude, I'm the same way. Like, my friends will try to help push me up a hill, and I'm like, no, I'm not. Leave me alone.
Yeah.
Now, I will say I do need help getting in sprinter bands sometimes. Those things are pretty tall, but other than that, I'm good.
Fair enough, fair enough. So, like, when you're, at home and stuff like that, like, do you live with somebody who's able to, like, sort of, like, help you with sort of, like, respite style stuff, or what's the deal there?
So after the injury, I was obviously living with my parents for a while. And then out here in California, I was staying by myself up until about Sunday, I guess. And I moved in with the people that actually own the therapy facility that I'm going to.
Oh, really?
But up until that, I was living on my own. I did that pre-injury, stayed at the track. And so I was already kind of used to it. And, yeah, so I kind of enjoyed the independence, made me feel good about myself. So yeah, I enjoy, you know, feeling like I've gained my independence back for sure.
That is really good to hear. What's the hardest part?
Honestly, none of it's really that hard. It's just the, you know, I really want to ride my dirt bike. Like, obviously, that was my whole life. None of it's really that hard, though. I am very fortunate. My body kind of handles everything well. A lot of people struggle with some temperature issues and stuff like that, but my body actually handles everything really well. So, very fortunate with all that.
Fair enough. The bike, like, obviously you're the proud owner of a number of dirt bikes prior to your injury. Are all of them gone? Do you still have one, or do you still have a couple? I'm sure that was a pretty delicate process, for yourself, your dad, and Ajax Kawasaki, that was loaning you some bikes.
Yeah, so we still have a 65 from when I was like 10 years old.
Okay. It's still the same as the bike today. Then, like, it might as well be a 2025.
Yeah, 65. Exactly. And then Ajax has my race bike from Loretta's this year. It's actually still on display up there. People signed it while I was in the hospital. And so it's still on display up at Ajax. And yeah, so I think we're going to try to keep that one. And then we have that 65 from when I was little. And yeah, I think my dad's struggling to kind of let go of all the bikes. To me, it doesn't really matter. I just hammered on them. So.
Yeah. Yeah. To you, it's like a used napkin, but, cause yeah, like you and I talked, like I'm not hard on dirt bikes. You and your friends are, abusive of dirt bikes. It's actually quite crazy. You guys' bikes get absolutely hammered. So with your injury, with that, a lot of times comes, like, there's good days and bad days. And I know I've talked to Jesse Nelson, and I hate to say this, but I think he might be, like, sort of the epitome of that, of having, like, there's times where I talk to him and there's some optimism there and he's enjoying life. And there's also a fair bit of bitterness that, can creep in as well. And it's completely understandable. I can't even begin to truly understand what that situation is like. But what's been that landscape for you? And if you ever do have some moments like that, how do you overcome it?
I mean, yeah, there's good days and bad days for sure. But I mean, there's good days and bad days with everything. I mean, there was good days and bad days riding dirt bikes. There were days I didn't want to ride at all. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm pretty good about keeping notes on how far I've came. And so I'm able to look back and be like, you know, a month ago, I would have loved to have been for this to be my bad day, you know? So I kind of just look back on where I was and remember the goal, and honestly, just the support system from people. I've got a lot of people I can call and be like, hey, I didn't have a good therapy session today. And they're like, you know, doesn't matter that much. Everyone has off days. Mm-hmm. So I really don't ride the wave. I don't get too high. I don't get too low. And I really improved on that this whole last year of racing, and it's helped me a lot throughout this injury.
Fair enough. Do you have to do anything special for pain management, or I guess like you can't really you don't need pain management if you're not feeling certain things?
Yeah, no, dude, I don't take anything for pain. I don't like taking pills anyway, so I have some nerve pain in my back and stuff, but that's expected. But I don't take anything for it. I just hammer through.
Fair enough. I like it. So you're who are some of the guys that you've been able to speak with that are have also dealt with your injury? Obviously, you talked about Mike Young. I also steered Donovan Mitchell your way. Unfortunately, the list of guys who've gotten hurt is quite long. Who's sort of reached out, and which one of those conversations do you feel was most impactful for you?
Man, honestly, so many people. Mike's probably the person I talk to the most. I've talked to Jimmy Button at A2. There's a guy back home in Oklahoma that is he was the first person that I got to hang out with in person that is paralyzed, and that helped me a ton. Man, there's so many people. I talked to a guy that used to be really fast back in the day. His name's Justin Weeks. He helped me out a lot and told me kind of how he started walking again. And so, yeah, there's so many people, and there's still a ton of people that I can talk to that have reached out and have given me their contact and stuff like that. I met Doug Henry, while I was in ICU. I don't really remember that conversation much, but met him. There's so many people.
That's awesome. It's good to hear that you have a support system that has been able to come to your side and boost you up when you need it, man. I don't want to make this entire podcast specifically about the injury itself, but it definitely it bummed me out when because the conversation that I had with you 6 months ago was a very positive one. It was one that there was a lot of optimism, and honestly, it was a really good interview. There's a lot of I interview amateur kids probably once a week, and I wish that half of them had the positivity and the outlook and the attitude that you had have. And I'm glad that to see that that sort of transferred over into this other phase of your life, it's encouraging to see that.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. I've just never really seen a reason to, be upset with stuff even throughout this. Like a lot of people have told me, they were like, "Hey, don't stay down too long." And I'm like, "What do you mean stay down? Like I was never down. Maybe the first hour I was like, yeah, this sucks, but there's just no reason to make myself more miserable than I have to be. Like
Yeah.
I might as well still have a great time and, live the best life I can."
That's exactly it, man. I think you just hit the nail on the head. So that being said, do you want to just talk some dirt bikes here real quick?
Yeah.
We got this Supercross championship that the 450 class is separated by 5 points at the very top of it. Jet Lawrence just exited the chat along with his ACL. What have you been seeing, man?
Yeah, dude, this season's been crazy. I've been really fortunate to get to go to the first three rounds. I didn't go to Glendale, but yeah, it sucks Jet's out because Eli, him, and Chase, I think, have taken the sport to a whole new level. I don't think you could go much faster on a dirt bike than what those three are going right now.
Really, huh? It honestly, it's pretty impressive to see what those guys can do. They're so athletic. They, in certain respects, I think sometimes they look similar on the bike. Maybe that's the fact that they're wearing very similar gear. But yeah, it is like there's a notable difference in riding and the sort of you don't realize how much they stand until you see how much even a guy like Eli will sit. And even more so do you look back at like, I'll never say anything negative about how James Stewart rode a dirt bike. But like, there's some footage from, I believe it was like Washougal 2008, where you're like, he's sitting everywhere compared to how they do it now. Like the guys at the absolute pinnacle of it, Jet and Chase, like they're a different breed now.
Yeah, Jet especially, like his feet never leave the pegs, and Eli still kind of got that old school like hanging out style.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. You know when Eli's coming around. But, yeah, I mean, Jet and Chase, they just – that's what's crazy about watching them is they don't even look like they're going that fast. And you watch a guy like Eli, and, he, you know, you can hear his bike. He's laying it over, but yet they're all going the same speed. And just the different styles and watching how they, like, pan out and work on different tracks is so cool.
Certainly. So – also the 250 class, probably some athletes that you grew up racing with, to be honest. Julian Beaumier, Hayden Deegan, you got that Cole Davies kid who seems to have, like, literally, I'm not going to say New Zealand is nowhere, but let's just say it came out of nowhere. And showing Deegan a wheel here. A lot of people talking about the rolling into the season. Basically, like, there's a chance that he could, like, sweep the series. He's got one win so far and he's only a few points out of the lead, but, what are you seeing in the 250 class?
Yeah. If you would have told me that Hayden wasn't in the points lead after four rounds, I would have told you that you're crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I grew up racing Hayden and Juju both. So, you know, it's cool to know that I've raced them and see where they are. I would obviously like to be there with them. But I mean, it's super cool to see where they are. And I like the little rivalry that's brewing. After Levi got sick, I was kind of worried about, you know, anyone going to be able to challenge Hayden. I had no idea Cole was going to be that good. Cole was insane. I mean, he should have won at Glendale. He just had a little mishap, got a bad start.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's the 250 class has been crazy, and I'm East Coast is even more stacked. So really excited to see that too.
No kidding. Yeah. Like actually the 250 class is absolutely wild. Recently heard that, unfortunately Cameron McAdoo, has a torn ACL. I don't know that the PR has come out for that properly yet. Not that I think that, Big MX Radio is breaking incredible news. I texted with Cameron last night, and he said, he's like, you could say it because I think it's public knowledge. It was news to me prior to hearing that. So, I didn't know how readily available that information is, but yeah, the hit parade for Pro Circuit just seems to continue. They have two healthy athletes essentially, unless you count Marchbanks, but at this point I do not.
Yeah. That sucks so bad for PC. I don't know what it is. I mean, they have really good riders, and even Drew, you had come out and do really good at his rookie debut, and then, you know, collar just bone. A small mishap in practice, and yeah, it's just, it's crazy that much bad luck can happen to one team. I mean, I know they'll turn it around eventually. Those bikes are so good. There's no way, you know, and the riders for that matter, like, eventually it's going to start clicking again.
It has to. Like, I don't think there's no choice in the matter. They've got to, something needs to change in that respect. But honestly, it's funny. I think, like, yeah, they have experienced a lot of injuries, but so has a lot of other teams. I think obviously, like, because Kawasaki was just like that 800-pound gorilla that rattled off so many championships. And it's funny because they often also had guys that got hurt in and around those championships. Just the guys who were winning those championships weren't always getting, succumbing to injury. Like, when Villopoto was knocking down 250 championships, guys like Brett Metcalf and Stroop and some of his other teammates, like, those guys were getting nicked up as well. They just always had one flagship rider that was still able to get it done. Unfortunately, now it's been, in recent history, it's been guys like Faulkner and McAdoo, Seth Hammaker, guys who could probably knock down a championship that are being on the sidelines on a regular basis. But I'm looking forward to 250 East. Tampa, Supercross, it's not a location that we've gone to a lot in recent history. Like, we've kind of gone there for a year or two, then gone away for more than a few years. Now it's back on the schedule. It's coming up this weekend. I'm excited about it.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited to just get a fresh group of 250 guys, hopefully let some on the West Coast heal up a little bit. And yeah, just transfer over. We get, you know, both of last year's champions, which is really cool. That really never happens. And then Forkner on a new team. I mean, I've never seen Austin ride anything other than a Cowie. So that would be really exciting. And Jordan Smith proved that bike is really good. So I'm excited to see that. And Levi, I mean, that was Levi's title to lose last year. And he, you know, just had some bad luck and went down. So I think, I think 250 East is going to be really good.
No, it's going to be a banger. I don't know, like, this might be a controversial take, but I think that in the year after a championship, that both guys who won the championship from the previous year, they should be allowed to run one W and one E. I think that would look cool.
Yeah, it definitely would. I mean, the number one is like every kid's dream to get the run.
Yeah.
And, you know, Hampshire's not going to get to just because he was out for West. Yeah, that would be really cool to get to run one E and one W.
So when they do, here's a question though. When they do the East-West shootouts, does he roll out the one W?
I don't know why you wouldn't. I mean, if it's allowed, I 100% would.
100%. Why not?
Looks so cool.
Yeah, I always liked that about the Vegas race. Obviously, that was like the Davy Coombs Senior East West Shootout. They started that, I think, late '90s after he had passed. I think that would be absolutely. I would love to see it. Now, I hope that that Gas kind of has that under there. Is he on Gas? No, he's not on Gas. He's on the. He's still on the Husky.
Husky.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like that whole situation is just it's a schmozzle of mess. I don't even know. You have some guy, like, you have Cochran. Who is Cochran racing or not? I think is he hurt?
Yes, he's on Gas.
Right, so he's it's now Rockstar Gas, which sometimes I think that team, like, it's a good team look, and other times I'm like, kind of liked it as Red Bull better. The cosmetics of the sport matter to me, Adler. So,
Red Bull's such a cool sponsor.
Yeah, 100%. Like, but of course, at the same time, like, if you're Kawasaki, you like the green claw just sort of like goes, right?
Yeah, when you think of Monster, you think of Kawasaki. Like, they've been together, I mean, way longer than I can remember. So that's just what goes together. I mean, green and green.
Yeah, which is funny because the global partnership between brands is Yamaha and Monster. Like, they don't have a global global partnership for Kawasaki.
Yeah, that's crazy. When I think of any team related to Monster, I think of, you know, Cowie.
Yeah. And, it's kind of funny to think of, but, I'm excited about 250 East. I'm actually now very much curious I'm going to text RJ to find out, if that's even been thought about, but, not to spin the clocks back to your situation, but, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is, if you're able to, recover to the level of being able to to ride an adaptive bike, is that something that you would consider?
I don't know. I haven't really decided. I would like to ride, but I'd like to regain, you know, full function, and become a weekend warrior. It just seems like a great time. But I was actually talking to my friends the other day, my old mechanic, and one of my best friends has a Stark, and I was like, hey dude, when I get back, we should strap my legs to the bike and let me go hammer down. It's definitely crossed my mind, just because, you know, I miss having bars on my hands and something to ride all the time.
Yeah, when I first saw that you had the scooter attachment for your wheelchair, I'm like, oh, he's fucking set now.
Yeah, dude, the scooter's so fun. It's my. I'm gonna get a fake clutch for it and put a clutch on it. That way, I have two levers.
Yeah, exactly. You put the what's it called? Works connection throttle perch on or clutch perch on there.
Yeah, something. We're gonna do something. I'm gonna put some bars on there. When I get home, that thing's gonna be
hand guards.
No, Matt was never a hand guard guy.
Fair enough. What were some like moto? I could say you call it moto fashion or like what was like something that you were like it needs to have this or like as far as like gear wise, bike wise, like what were you finicky about as far as the cosmetics of the dirt bike?
Not really about the bike. Like I really didn't care that much. I couldn't stand a ride with dirty boots. I hated dirty boots. Other than that, like, I really wasn't that picky. I mean, I always liked my setups to look good, which being on Rennen was not hard to do. I mean, all my setups were so sick. So I don't know. I really wasn't that picky about how my stuff looked. My goggles always matched my gear. I will say I was pretty picky about that. I was a big red glove guy. I always liked my hands to pop in videos. So I always wear red gloves. Other than that, there's not much.
All right, J-Law, we get it.
Yeah.
Was that a J-Law thing or was that a Dean Wilson thing? I think it was kind of both.
I don't remember. I remember J-Law wearing, yeah.
I think I want to say that was a J-Law thing that Dean Wilson stole from him. Because I know Dean ran the red gloves PC forever.
Yeah, I always wore red gloves. I had more red gloves than any other color.
Yeah, I don't know. I also, I'm a red glove guy. It just looks good. You can't argue with it. For whatever reason, the red gloves goes with like basically all gear for what as far as I'm concerned. It oddly went well with even the pro circuit stuff back in the day, which always said it looked the same.
Yeah, I mean, it goes with any kit. And especially I had red boots, so I would wear the red boots to match with it sometimes. And yeah, I mean, dude, it just always looked good.
I like it. That is well done by yourself. How long are you in Cali for? Is it extended stay? Is there a cap on it? What's the deal?
So it's kind of up in the air right now, until the 1st of March guaranteed. And then we're just going to kind of reassess and see how my progress has gone. And if I'm still making progress, we might stay out here longer. Obviously I'd like to get back to Oklahoma. I need to start school and a job and all that stuff. So we'll see. But right now till the 1st of March is the plan.
There you go. I like it. Cool, man. Well, this is not the podcast that we originally intended, but I'm glad we were able to have you on and discuss, your current situation and your recovery, to date. And, looking forward to continuing to stay up with you on this sort of stuff. I'd love to have you on for some podcasts down the way, to do some like race reviews, sort of talk about the sport. You're obviously a whole lot more plugged in than most are. So, I appreciate you making some time.
Yeah, I appreciate you having me. I still love the sport, even though I'm not riding.
Yeah,
still a big fan.
Yeah. Who are your picks for this weekend? Who's going to stand above?
I don't know. I feel like going east. Eli's got it. If he can get the starts figured out, I think he's been the fastest guy. As far as the East Coast go, I don't know. Honestly, I mean, there's so many good guys. It'd be hard for me to bet against Levi. I just feel like Levi's so fast right now. Probably Levi and Eli.
Levi and Eli going into Tampa Supercross. Adler Cottle here on the Big MX Radio Podcast. Adler, thank you so much for making some time for the show, man. This has been awesome.
Yep, thank you.
All right, dude. Get back to training now.
Yep, will do.